Tarot Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. Today is April 5th, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. And thank you for joining us once again here on UCY.TV radio. We really appreciate your listenership, and we appreciate you sharing our radio show and telling other people where they can go to listen to interviews with activists and other people making a difference on our planet. So thank you for that. Thank you for joining us. Today we have a returning guest, a friend of our show, and I'm really excited as his case moves along in the court system. It sounds like it's going to be soon. I'm very excited to have Larry Bergen with us, and he is really from one of the little town. It's called Venice, Illinois, where Larry worked in a factory. So thank you, Larry, for joining us. I really appreciate you returning to the show.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here because it's a very important topic and needs to be discussed.
It does need to be discussed. So let me just give them a quick rundown. You worked in a factory that was built during World War II to help the government build some reactor things. And what was it?
Army tanks, military equipment, mostly Army tanks. And subsequently, after the war ended, the factory stayed in production, but here it started producing wrought metals, for instance, aluminum, magnesium. But one of the other things they processed was radiological metals, thorium and uranium. And
wow.
This is where the inherent danger lies.
Yeah. Well, I was reading in an article, it said that this is not a small factory. It says it's almost as big as the town itself. That's how they described it in this article that I was reading. It's not just a small little, it's a one lengthy long building that takes up a large area, correct?
Yes. Oh, it's over 500,000 square feet of floor space. I think there was like an estimate of 250,000 or 500,000 panes of glass just, you know, in the windows. It was, like I said, it was built for the military during World War II, and they spent no expense back then to build it. And when this factory took over, well, they decided they could do whatever they wanted because the government did. In the same building, they had the same mindset. Well, if they can do it, we can do it. And the subsequent owners following produced radiological metals, radioactive metals, for years, up to the year 2000. And without any oversight from anyone.
Wow.
And this I find very disturbing.
Well, it says in this article that I found, it's an old article from the Riverfront Times. It was in 2010, before you won your lawsuit. It was describing, it was the most explanatory article I had found on the internet. I'll put the link in the credits. But it was saying that it was originally built during World War II to build, make turrets, tank turrets. And it was 10 interconnected buildings, 1.4 square feet, million feet, housed beneath a flat concrete roof. And then in 1952, they sold the plant to Dow Chemical, which got a defense contract creating experimental thorium alloys, mostly missiles and high for high speed aircraft. And then in 1957, the facility started conducting, quote, experimental work in straightening uranium fuel rods and built nose cones for the ballistic missiles. And
Well, what they left out
that's
was the first they processed those rods there first, and then brought them back and had them straightened and sanded on. Believe it or not, they used
right.
grinders on uranium.
In fact,
How
not
irresponsible.
only that, but they underscored it because then it said that more than 80 tons of thorium and a quote unknown but likely small amount of uranium had been processed at the plant.
Very down, yeah, downplaying it very, very much.
Very, very, very much. But it does
Actually, there
say
was
that the
over three
workers were
million.
responsible.
There's
Excuse
over
me.
3,200,000 pounds of uranium processed through one machine. You know, that's not, and it took over 4 years to do this. So that's not really a small lot.
No. Even this article says that the workers were exposed to levels nearly 3,000 times above the government's safe level. And
Oh, yes.
how long, you sent me a package. How long have you of all of, you sent me a whole, this is so awesome. You sent me a picture, a little package with pictures of the factory of his body that's been harmed. Like,
Oh, yes.
you know, there's one picture of him, the whole backside of his body is just like burns, uranium burns. Now, did they just pop up? Did it start like psoriasis or did you
Well,
lean on
it just started out
something?
as a small rash. And then I
Huh.
developed another one somewhere else on my body, then another one. And it was starting to multiply. And I, of course, you know, at the time I was working at the factory, I had insurance through the factory. So I was going to see doctors, and they couldn't, you know, explain what was happening to me at the time. Then I started developing arthritis in my joints and other health issues as well. And when that occurred, I was, of course, I was turning my medical into the company for payment. So they knew what was going on with my body, besides me and my doctor. This got them around the patient-doctor confidentiality law because they controlled the insurance. The company also controlled the no knowledge of the employees' health issues, which I believe should be illegal. But at the time, you know, we needed their medical insurance, so we didn't complain. And it's basically how they controlled us from complaining about radiation or asking questions. They use fear and intimidation. And no one wants to lose their job and make your family suffer. So we just accepted their answers that we're not in danger, that it's all okay, and you know, moved on. But once I started getting ill and all these strange illnesses started popping up, I started acquiring things I never had before. Then they took notice, this factory. And I believe the next step was to put us all out of work before we figured it out. And that's what they did. They put all the employees out of work and opened up under a new name within 6 to 8 months after my strange illnesses started surfacing. Now, I believe I may have been the litmus test for this and for the cause for all these employees losing their jobs. Given the fact that I worked directly ground zero where this radiation was processed for over 10 years. So I was almost the poster boy for these exposures. And I use that word because that's what my attorney calls me, the poster boy for this cause, because of my illnesses and all my information I've shown to back it up.
Wow. Well, one of the
Again,
things is this article says that you were denied. That was one of the things. I guess that's what started your when this article was written, you had not had your claim approved
no.
by the state. So, but this basically explains that the Department of in 2000, the Department of Labor demanded, they passed a law, Congress passed a law saying that the Department of Labor pay $150,000 in medical benefits for any person who likely developed cancer as a result of working at an atomic weapons or energy research site. You, at the time that this was written, was denied, and this was done in 2010.
Right. I never had a cancer, but I worked to get this clause included into our factory for specific reasons. One was to help other employees who had had cancers caused by radiation, not to leave them out, and two, to prove that it was in there in levels that could harm us. I needed to actually proof that was there in levels that were dangerous, and to get it from the government was my goal. So I worked for years to get that NIOSH cancer fund installed in our factory for employees. And as of today, over 188 families have received up to $28 million through this fund from their exposures. Now, again, I never had cancer, but I knew I couldn't ignore my coworkers who had cancer developed, you know, by their exposures. Now, I feel grateful for not having a cancer or having one develop yet in my lifetime, and I hope I never do, but it seems highly likely I will, given my close proximity and longevity where I worked. So maybe I was doing this to help myself in the future, as well as my coworkers, who knows, but this needed to be done. This needed to be the first step to prove it was causing health issues. Radiation inside this factory was the cause. So this was my first attempt to gain recognition for that. And I met with many government officials. I spoke with lots of lawyers and doctors. I even had, back then, Senator Obama was actually one of our spokespersons for our factory. He was one of his pet projects, so to speak, because his district director was deeply involved in getting our factory included into this cancer fund as well. And for that, I'm really grateful.
Wow.
And there's nowhere I would reach for help. There's nobody I would turn to on either side of the fence, on a political fence, or doctors, lawyers. You know, I'm just a factory worker, and that's all I am. And I'm disabled and out of work, and I'm trying to do my best to put the piece together to show the world the picture this factory has produced. And that picture is nothing but illnesses, pain, and suffering.
You sent me a list of the cancers in that neighborhood. It is astounding.
Oh.
It is astounding. Practically,
This is on the other side of the fence. This is not the employees' exposures, but these are the people living next to the
right.
Exposures.
Right. That's not even anybody who's working there. These are just the neighbors. Now, are any of the neighbors included in your lawsuit?
Well, yes. There's a few of them that are employees that are also included in this workers' comp claim as well. But as far as the residents go, they're a completely separate entity because they never worked there, so they're not eligible for any radiation compensation through the government cancer fund. So I've taken a different route with them. I've been a chairman of the committee for almost 9 years for these residents, and I take it very serious what I do. I am the only white person on the committee. The entire neighborhood we're speaking of, the community around this factory, is totally African-American, and almost all of them live at the poverty level because of their health issues, not because, you know, of any other reason, but because of over years of exposure and their health, poor health. And being a chairman of this committee and being a white man and, you know, responsible for so many other people, I take it as a great honor as well as a responsibility that they picked me to represent them, to trust me to represent them. And for that alone, I can't give up on helping them. And right now, I'm in talks with a law firm who won a $1 billion lawsuit for radiation case, and they're about ready to look into the residents' exposures here over in Venice. Right now, they're involved in the residents' exposures over at Coldwater Creek, over at Westlake Landfill. And as the owner of the law firm told me, as soon as we get done with the initial investigation part of the Westlake Landfill people, then they want to look into the residents over here in Venice. And the reason he wants to wait is he doesn't want to get the two sites confused during their discussions. So that's why we're waiting until it's our turn for justice.
Wow. Well, that doesn't seem...
Westlake,
to be honest, that does not seem fair. I mean, like... that they want you to wait. I mean, it sounds like that community's waited long enough. But, you know, Larry, I wanted to ask you this. You've been talking about how long, we've talked many times, how long you've been sort of compelled to do this. What was your life like before this happened? I mean, were you actively engaged in the public? I mean, were you a public figure?
Oh, absolutely not. I was a factory worker. I would go to work every day, come over day. We lived week by week, paycheck by paycheck, like everyone else. I lived in a little bubble, you know, like a lot of people do. I was worried about my family, my children, our home, and that's about it. I couldn't really worry about the rest of the world around us because I had no control over it, first of all, and I had no time between working and everything else. So I was just an everyday normal person going through life, you know, hoping to get to the next week until this happened. And I realized there was something bigger than me and my family involved here, something much bigger. And it wasn't just my life, it's hundreds of lives. In fact, at one time I had over 1,000 clients signed up with one attorney from each resident who were poisoned. And that tells you it's a much bigger thing. And it's just not me anymore. It was everyone. And when I came to that realization, I'm not alone was a very important realization on my part. Because when I first found out about my exposures and my health problems and everything, I was thinking, well, how can I find help for me and my family? And then when I found out there was others who were exposed and poisoned and sick like I was, I could not ignore them because that would make me as bad as the owner who ignored me. And I could not become the evil in which I fight. So I could not turn away anyone who was poisoned by this factory, whether inside the factory working or living next door to it. I had to be a spokesperson for both of them, or they had no voice.
That is really amazing.
What I wanted to do, it was what I had to do in order to find justice in some form for all those victims.
How many people live in the town of Apollo?
Venice?
Venice, I'm sorry.
That's all right. There's about 2,000 people live in Venice. And there's actually, I learned that no one in Venice pays property tax. That's because the property values are so low and there are so many people living at the poverty level that the entire town does not receive any type of tax. They don't even receive any tax from the factory. That goes to the town next door, believe it or not. So the only thing Venice ever got from this factory was its contamination and its pollution and its heartache, while the city next door received millions and millions and millions in tax dollars. In fact,
What city next door is that?
Madison, the city of Madison, Illinois.
People know where Madison is.
Right, Madison, Illinois. Now, the reason this factory was allowed to process these radiological metals for all these years was for the tax money. Madison didn't care because it wasn't in their city. It's over in Venice. It's on the other side of the tracks. So they didn't see it as a problem in their town. They saw it as a windfall. And it's like someone paying you to dump their trash in their neighbor's yard. Well, a lot of people are going to say, okay, I don't care. And that's the same mindset that the city council of Madison had for the same reason.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So the city of Madison knew what was going on, and they just ignored it?
Basically, they was ostriches with their head stuck in the sand. They didn't want to discuss the problem. And if there ever was come up the discussion of radiation, they always believed it was Venice's problem and not theirs. But in reality, they're the ones who caused the problem in Venice by allowing them to run this radiological metals and pile it up next to their factory. And when I mean pile this up, I mean talking about radioactive waste. They didn't bury it. They didn't put it in barrels. They just dumped it on the ground and piled it up as tall as a two-story building and over a football field long. The residents said when the wind would blow, it would look like a sand dune. Now, I sort of dismissed this at first when I heard a resident tell me that. I thought maybe they was exaggerating. But when I spoke to with an employee who was working back in the 50s and 60s and 70s when this was piled up, he told me, yeah, that's true. He goes, they made them go out there and put rubber tarps over it to try to keep it from blowing in everyone's yards. I go, did it work? He goes, well, no. And even the residents would say they would find a fine film of dust in their sidewalks and on their lawn furniture. Well, it wasn't from the waste site particularly. It was from them melting it and producing. You see, when they was melting this, the smoke and radioactive particulate was sucked out of the room by they didn't have no dust collectors, nothing like that. All they had was exhaust fan. And this exhaust fan would suck this radioactive particulates out of the room where they were melting it and would drift over and land in the residents' yards on their gardens, on their clothes hanging on the line, even on the elementary school located 20 feet away from this factory, this radioactive dust would land on the playground. All downwind from where this factory is located. It's amazing how they was able to get away with this for as long as they did, and I'm trying to do my best to make sure they don't anymore.
What is the status of that factory now? What's going on there?
Well, it opened up under a new name, and I haven't been in there since then, so I have no idea. I only have a few people I know work inside who gives me updates on information and things of that nature. And as I understand it, they have a government defense contractor's license, mm-hmm. and, which means they can run certain alloys, but they don't have to tell people what they're running. And this is the dangerous part. We don't know what they're using to make this metal for the government. In the 1960s, there was a newspaper article in a local paper said that Dow is now using beryllium in their aluminum to help make a stronger, lighter alloy. Well, we know now beryllium is a Category 1 carcinogen. And so, they don't put these things in newspapers anymore when they have contracts because they don't want to come back and bite them in the ass. But back in the 60s, they weren't aware. They weren't that knowledgeable. So we know back then and you know what they were adding and using for in their metals and alloys. But today, we don't know what's included. And to give you further insight on this factory's mindset is, they don't fly an American flag out front. They fly a British flag. That's correct. The same factory does not fly an American flag. They fly a British flag. See, the half owner is a British billionaire who lives in England, and he owns a beryllium mine.
Wow.
Now, in 2007, I seen a newspaper article saying that they've got a new government contract, this factory, to make a stronger, sturdier, lighter alloy for the government. Now, that's the exact same words they used in the 1960 newspaper article saying we're using beryllium to make a stronger, lighter alloy for the government.
Wow.
So there's a possibility that they're using beryllium today, as they did all through, you know, the decades before, to make a stronger, lighter alloy for the government. And if they are, oh, good Lord, I mean, it's a Category 1 carcinogen. It was banned in 1955 from flash bulbs, from fluorescent lights, from a lot of different processes because of its toxicity.
Well, Larry, let me ask you this. I'm looking at Google Maps. I went to look at Google Maps to see precisely where it is, and I looked at the little town of Venice. It's sliced it out. Is this facility, this big gray thing that's right on the Mississippi River, does it sit on the facility on the Mississippi River, or where is it located?
No, that's the Army. That's the Army Depot beside the factory. The Army.
Oh my gosh!
It's 1001 College Street. In Madison, and again, this factory.
So it's actually in Madison.
No, it's not. See. Believe it or not, the waste site was listed as Madison property, but the factory was actually built in Venice. And when they flipped a coin back in the 50s to see who gets the tax money, it all went to Madison. So even though the factory is in Venice, Madison gets all the revenue. Madison is the – now, keep in mind, Venice is the poorest city in Illinois for its size. And there's no reason for that. Where the city next door, Madison, is the largest and most wealthiest city of their size. In fact, they bought the Chain of Rocks Bridge that goes across the Mississippi. Now, the strange part is, this bridge is nowhere near Madison. Why would they buy it? Because they have the funds. Where Venice, they don't even have enough money for their fire department.
Wow.
They don't even have enough money for a trash truck repairs.
Wow.
This is how bad it is in Venice. They don't even have a business there. They just built a convenience store 2 years ago. But they have no other businesses in that town. That's it, just one convenience store. Where
well,
Madison
the thing
has
is,
all these different...
it's also not like an isolated little town. It's surrounded by other towns in Illinois. And it sits right on the Mississippi River.
Yeah, well, yes. You can in that photograph I sent you, you can actually see the Mississippi in the background. It shows the factory, and in the background, you can actually see the canal and the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm. It's so outrageous.
Yes, well, a bad flood could have wrought untold damages on its own. But if it would have reached this radioactive waste that was piled up on this lot next to this factory, it could have been much more worse, much, much more worse. In fact, they removed over 212 million pounds of radioactive waste in one radiological cleanup. Now, there was only 239 million people living in the United States back in 1992 when they removed this radioactive waste. So, to put it in perspective, it was 1 pound of radioactive waste for every man, woman, and child living in the United States was on this empty lot next to these residents' homes and 2 blocks from an elementary school. And no one knows about it. They never even put up warning signs on the fence. They don't even have a keep out sign on the fence, let alone danger radiation. They never advertised the fact to avoid liability.
It is just beyond comprehension how inhumane this is. Now, let me ask you this.
This is all done for profit. Remember, they weren't doing this just because they were bored or had nothing better to do. This was all about dollars and cents on the company side. The human aspect, the human part, was completely ignored. It wasn't even considered, as far as I know, any health issues.
It never is considered. That's the most annoying part, isn't it? No, they never consider the human aspect of it. They only always
they're holding to more than they are to public and to.
They only talk about the money. Every single article across the board that I've ever seen, when they talk about nuclear facilities and should we close them or is this one working, there is not even an iota of concern for the general welfare of the public. It is incomprehensible to me, but that's a running theme of the nuclear industry.
Well, when they found out they could take advantage of the employees, it was much easier for them to take the next step and take advantage of the residents next door. I mean, if we got away with this, we could get away with that. And that's where it snowballed into where we have the problems today. Now, they believe they're completely disconnected from the mess they created because they sold the factory to someone else. Now it's your problem. They sold it to someone else. Now it's their problem. No, it's still all of our problems that they created. And that's why we're on the air today, is trying to make sure that they don't get away with what they've done. The people know.
Now, do you know if there's other facilities in that vicinity? Is that an isolated case? Or I know it's right across the river from the Westlake landfill, that's for sure. If you look
right
on the map, it's like...
In fact, some of the radioactive waste we may have may have been sent to Westlake landfill. I'm almost sure of it, that because of all the years that we processed radiologicals in our factory, they had to ship some of it somewhere. And I believe some of it was sent down to Westlake as well, given the time frames and everything else that we found. So, but you got to remember, the very first radioactive material processed in mass was here in St. Louis for the Manhattan Project. That means the very first at Mallinckrodt here in St. Louis, in downtown St. Louis, is where they processed this, of all places, 10 feet away from the Mississippi River in the 30s and 40s. This is where they processed uranium. And it's sad to say that, you know, they just didn't care. It was convenient, and that's all they thought of. It's convenient. It's easy to get to. It's close by. They didn't think about the residual contamination. And again, remember, St. Louis is the very first place in the entire world where radioactive waste was created from this process. So that's really a sad way of... marking a historic event.
It is really a sad way. What's really sad about it is we talk about American exceptionalism. Well, to me, this is, I guess we could say we're exceptionally deceptive, you know, because they're killing their own people. Like, the Mississippi River is the heart of our country. No wonder New Orleans is the cancer capital of the planet.
Yeah, they catch all the... everything flowing downstream.
I mean, this is basically processing the. I mean, it's incomprehensible what the military has done to our country. I mean, it's just beyond comprehension.
Well, I don't like to think of the military as the few individuals at the top who make the decisions. You know, and again, when they gave our factory permission to run this radiological metal, they said, well, this factory can do this. You know, they could do this. They have the process. They have the means. But they should have walked out to the factory. They should have stepped out in the parking lot and looked around at all the residents' homes. And instead of saying they could do this, they should have asked themselves, should they do this? And that's the one thing they never did. They didn't look around at the people living next to this factory.
That's because they don't care
about people. Yeah, we can do this. They never did ask, should they? And that's where the government fell on their, let us down.
Now, do you know if the people in that vicinity have beyond cancer? Do they have, are their families affected long term? Are any of them ill or presenting illnesses? And are they getting any help or anything?
No, no. In fact, a majority of the residents are still in totally oblivious to this. There's handfuls of people who's come to our committees and they know the situation. Either they read it in a newspaper article we put out or on a TV station or a news program. I've went to many medias to try to get the word out to as many people as possible. But there's still many residents out there who have no clue that their yards are contaminated or to what levels, and are their health problems are associated with their health problems. Many, many of these residents have no clue because the secret that these factories kept. If they did a really good job containing the fact of what they did inside, and exasperated the problem even more. I mean, you know, if nobody knows and no one complains, then they can process more radiological metal. And it's still, if no one complains, well, that's good. Then that means they can run more radio. And that's exactly what they did. They did it all the way up to the year 2000, run this radioactive thorium and beryllium. And,
wow.
And it's because no one complained. But once their liability started building up, once I started getting sick, and maybe a few other employees, they knew this was the handwriting on a wall. That's why they filed bankruptcy to release themselves of the liability of the problem they created. And they opened up under a new name to start the process all over again.
Now, it looks like on the Google Maps that there's like next to the Beelman River terminals, there's a big facility that processes some process. Is that related to the nuclear industry at all? Is that separate?
It has to be separate.
Do you know about
that? If it's on a military base, we have no idea what they're doing over there. And they've opened up a lot of that Army Depot to the public now. So I don't suspect that they'll have anything that's hazardous over there now. But again, you never know with our military.
I'm sure they do.
But in the back half of this, They still have the warehouses where they used to store their military arms and weapons and other things. But as of now, we have no knowledge of anything they have stored over there that's hazardous. But I do have a newspaper article from 1966 stating that this Army depot next to our factory had over 6 million pounds of radioactive thorium in barrels stored in the warehouse, and the barrels were leaking.
Oh, wow.
And they had to get rid of them. So they started taking them, and this is what the newspaper article says. So they started taking these barrels from the Army depot and dumping it at the Westlake landfill.
Oh, my God.
And then a company, a recycling company, decided to buy them. And then they had to actually dig those barrels out of the radioactive landfill, the ones they dumped, and they shipped them all to another, which we don't know where, shipped all these 6 million pounds of radioactive thorium to some other state for this recycling company to use.
Well, what do they use it for? Like, what would they use be for?
Well, it's a rare earth metal. If you reclaim it and you get all the it's a whole lot easier to recycle than to dig it up and start all over again. So that's basically what this company was doing, was recycling this radioactive material. Now, here's the funny part, I believe, is 6 million pounds of this radioactive waste is on the left side of this factory at the Army Depot. Then there's 200 million pounds of the exact same waste on the left side of the factory. So this factory, you know, there's radioactive waste piled up on both sides of the factory, on the lot next door and the Army depot on the other side.
Still to this day?
No. They removed it back in 81.
Okay.
According to the newspaper article from the Army depot. Uh-huh. But knowing the fact that both this type of radiation was located on both sides of the factory and in millions of pounds should be a warning sign. You know, there's a problem here. It should be a red flag, but no one ever picked up on it.
Wow.
Now, there's a warehouse that's also located next to our factory and to where the residents live here. And it was right beside the waste site that this factory created. The 200 million pounds I spoke of, okay, It was this lot was located next to this warehouse. Now, an employee back in 1994, his name was Doc Mothershed. He was digging a hole inside this warehouse on Thanksgiving Day. And his son and daughter was there to help him because they wanted to get him home in time for Thanksgiving dinner. So his children went to help him that day. And he was digging a hole trying to find a cracked water line inside the underground under the factory floor. Well, according to his widow and to his daughter, I spoke with both of them, they said as he was digging, all of a sudden a flood of water come in and filled up the hole up to his waist immediately. And his son and daughter had to help him out of the hole. And when they did, he got home. And he pulled his clothes off, and he had as his wife told me, a terrible sunburn from the waist down where he was standing in that water. And even a few days later, his skin peeled off as though it was sunburned as well. All from the water that filled that ditch, that little hole he was in next to this waste site. And he died of leukemia 3 years later, a well-known cancer caused by radiation.
Wow. Really?
Really.
Is his family suing or doing anything to, do you know?
His daughter worked for years to try to find connection between that factory and this radiation and her father's death. She actually became a physicist, and I applaud her for her willingness to look into this and go to that level to try to find help for her family and her loved ones. And so I told her that I'm doing everything I can to help the residents, and if it can spill over to help the employees of this warehouse as well. So I'm trying to help her and, well, her mother just passed away recently, but trying to help her and her family as well. Because it's not just the residents and it's not just the employees of our factory, but it's the employees of a warehouse about 50 yards away from us as well.
What did her mother die of, do you know?
Oh, I don't remember. I seen it, her obituary in the paper, and I knew she passed.
You don't think it was related to this? You think it was just old age?
Yes, she was in her 80s.
This is just so incredible, Larry. And so you just went from being like a family man who went to work every single day, doing
That's
the best that you could for your kids, working in a factory, literally slaving away, working like a slave in a hot, sweaty
factory. Living
the
American dream. I was living the American dream. I bought a new home. I had two cars. We was making 50 grand a year. We was doing great. Now, We've been in poverty the last 15 years. I had to
Since
stand in line
sick.
At a food pantry for Thanksgiving just so we had food for Thanksgiving dinner. And I'm one of the lucky ones still. Remember, I haven't had cancer. I have all sorts of health issues derived from my exposures, but I haven't had a cancer as of yet, knock on wood. But so in some aspects, I'm luckier than a lot of other employees and residents out there.
Now, your case has been approved for unemployment or disability or something like
Workers'
that?
Compensation. Compensation. Now, my disability, when I first got sick, I was unable to walk for almost a year. I had to learn to walk again. It affected, lots of my health problems were associated, I believe, from my exposures, my skin, my joints. I have heart problems, respiratory problems, kidney problems and such. And so I believe a lot of my exposures were derived from, my health problems were derived from exposures as well. But the people who... The other employees, they had no clue. They were just like me, there's until someone tells them. But I had no choice. I had to find out why I was sick. I had to find out, once I learned to walk again, it took me a year. I wanted to find out what was wrong with me. I've never been sick in my life. And slowly, we started losing everything we worked for over the years. Me and my wife both. Her health got poor. She had to quit as a Sunday school teacher because she couldn't show up on Sundays. Things of this nature. She had to quit her job. She worked at a church also. She had to give that up to care for me when I was at my worst. And so, being poisoned by radiation takes a lot more away from you than your health and your well-being. It takes away your life in many ways, your financial aspects, your dreams. We used to have dreams of what we wanted to do when we got older and places we wanted to go. Those were all stolen from us by this factory. And we're not the only ones. Keep that in mind. I'm not special. I'm just a normal person. It's just that I was able to find things that no one else was looking for or or knew what to look for. And I believe, you know, the good to come from this was I was able to find the reason why we're sick, to find the causes, to find the documentation. We need to prove this. So, you know, the double-edged sword is, yes, it's sad what they did to me, but the good to come from this was we found out why this was happening to us. And to find the good to come from something bad is what I've been working at ever since, to find help for every victim created by that factory, both inside and out.
Wow. Well, that's very generous of you.
I mean, this isn't what I wanted to do with my life. This is what I was...
Right. Well, me either. I'm on the radio 5 days a week now, talking to people who are trying to make a difference. I mean, we are coming against, I mean, this is, if this doesn't speak to the monster that we're talking about, the complete, let me ask you this. I have two questions. First, your case has been affirmed, right? They have affirmed that you were entitled to workers' comp in Illinois, correct?
Right. In fact,
and you guys are very close to settling. It's just kind of a matter of time.
Yes. It's been 8 years, and I don't know if anybody's ever dealt with attorneys before, but if the attorney has your case more than 2, 4 years, 6 years, they're going to win it, or they would never hold on to it that long. That's almost a fact.
For sure.
And I believe the reason the duration is taking so long is because I signed so many people up behind me. One of my coworkers says, man, you shot yourself in the foot. If you wouldn't have signed anybody up, you know, behind you, you'd have been his only client, and he'd have got you your money years ago. And he's probably right. But I would have been left with survivor's guilt, you know, being the only one to profit from this and ignoring others. Again, same as the owner. He profited from poisoning us, ignored us. I couldn't become him. So, you know, these last 7, 8 years living in poverty, is it my own fault because I signed everyone up behind me and dragged it all out? Yes, but in hindsight, okay, I'm glad I did, because I could not ignore these people like I was. So, you know, I'll get my money. I have something to look forward to. I have hope. I have something a lot of people in this world don't have. And
well, this is the hard part about this is when we're talking about you getting money, it's you're not going to live the life of luxury. The money that you're going to get is going to pay for your medical care. Frankly.
Well, the money I'd get is actually the money I would have earned if I'd have been healthy these last 15
right.
years.
That's
so
right.
They're not really compensating me. I'm just, you know, there's no justice here. It's just compensation, so to speak. But, you know, I'm not winning a lottery when I get this money. This
right.
money is in some way blood money, you know.
Yeah, it is.
I had to suffer for this in many, many ways to obtain this money that we need.
How many people do you have behind?
Played a part in this. I mean, when I first became ill, my wife had to fill out my Social Security forms because I was unable to. My hand wouldn't work, and she actually used a pencil in case she made a mistake. They approved my Social Security within 6 months, the very first time I applied.
Wow!
I've never heard of them ever doing that. I mean, they must approve some people the very first time, but from my understanding, from everyone I've ever spoke to on disability, they've had to reapply 2, 3, 4, 5 times before they get approved. And I always wondered, why didn't that happen to me? And I believe maybe Social Security checked into where I worked, and they seen a red flag which told them, oh, yeah, there's inherent dangers working here. And I believe that may have been why I was approved so quickly for my Social Security disability with no, you know, no bars hold.
What is the state of Illinois' position, like your elected officials? I figure you have probably been in touch with them. Are any of them behind the effort to help you get justice?
Yeah, well, I have been talking to a lot of politicians recently. Now, for years, we would go through attorneys because I always thought that would be a much faster approach of, you know, getting things done or getting some questions answered was through attorneys. So for years, we went through lawyers trying to get compensation for the employees and the residents next door. And as a chairman of the committee, I spoke with dozens of lawyers on their behalf. And the reason we went through attorneys was because the Coldwater Creek residents were going through all the politicians for years trying to get help for their situation and going nowhere. So we made a conscious effort to do the opposite of what they were doing, go through the lawyers instead. Because if they were going through politicians and going nowhere, well, we didn't want to take that path. So we decided to go a different path and go through attorneys. And the good thing about that is, well, they was, you know, they let us go after so many months, but they would always find new information. And the next lawyer we'd get a hold of, you know, he said, well, you know, you got a good case here, but you just don't have this for us to, you know, to go forward. Our committee would spend weeks, if not months, to find that information he needed, and we'd go to another lawyer. And he said, well, you got a good case here, and you got this. You just don't have that. So we would work for months to obtain that information that he requested, and we'd go to another lawyer. He'd say, well, you got a good case here, and you got this, and you got that. Well, now you just need the other. And again, we would work for months, and the next lawyer, and the next lawyer, and the next lawyer. And I believe these lawyers over the years were not letting us go or dismissing us. They actually was helping us build our case step by step by step to prove everything we needed that these residents were poisoned. In other words, the last lawyer we went to, we had this, that, the other, and everything else they needed to prove our case. So I see it as them not dismissing us, but helping us build our case. It was like a hidden miracle throughout this process. We was always looking for that one attorney who can help us, but I believe it was the all of them combined and all the help they provided is what really will make this possible. You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
If it was, yeah, you know.
Larry, you have compiled.
Lawyers were sort of a good thing in a way because they helped us go to another one and find more information. And he helped us go to another one and find more important information.
Well, for goodness sakes, by the end of this, you can probably be an attorney yourself, frankly.
Oh,
I mean, to be honest. Because it seems like you sent me this package. You sent me a very comprehensive package about the residents, about yourself, about the factory. I mean, just the residents alone, when you sent me a radiation readings from the residents alone, and it is off the charts. And this was taken in 2012. The readings range, it says background of counts per minute is 41.4. The highest readings on them are in the high 70s, the high 90s.
235 levels are so high. I sent these findings off to a nuclear physicist, a health physicist down in Georgia, and had him look them over, and he says, oh, no. He goes, this can't be right. He goes, these uranium-235 cannot be found in people's yards in these levels. It's just impossible. So it cannot be background or natural. It has to be from an outside source. And given the fact that a factory 20 feet away ran it, there's your source. I mean, the uranium that's in these residents' yards is a Belgium Congo ore. There's no other way it could have got there except from production, and it was produced in a factory 20 feet away. It's amazing. And to find these levels in their yards so high, give you an idea. Uranium-235 is so rare that all the uranium in the entire world, if you take all the uranium in the entire world, 0.7% of it is U-235. That's how rare it is. Yet, we found it in measurable levels in their yards.
Oh, my God. Well, you sent me a photo of how the uranium escaped or something like that. So explain how that worked, because it looks like a huge leak, essentially.
And at one photograph I showed a silhouette of the factory, and it has a giant red spot where the highest concentration was inside the factory of the uranium.
Right.
Yeah. Now, if you look at that photograph, you can see how that red spot, the highest levels, goes to the wall for some reason. And if you look at one of the Army Corps of Engineers photographs, they actually show a picture of the window and that wall where that radiation was.
Wow.
Well, that wall is actually on the east side. And so the wind blew in from the west, blew it out the window on the east side, which landed directly on the residents' yards.
Directly on the residents' property. The
so
cancer
prevailing
list.
Wind is what blew it out the window and towards the residents' yards. And again, they had no dust collectors.
There's an Excel spreadsheet, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages of an Excel spreadsheet of the cancer list of the residents in that area.
The first pages are just two blocks.
And what year was this conducted, though?
2012. And it was actually impromptu cancer list that we could find. Now, if a government entity would come in and do a really comprehensive health study I'm sure those numbers would be much higher. But the cancer list we compiled was from residents coming to our committee meetings. They was telling us about their family's health problems or their cousins and their or their past relatives that passed away. So that's how we compiled our cancer list, was from the residents themselves. It was impromptu, of course, because we have no analytical data to back it up, but that's why a comprehensive health study needs to be done. And we filed a petition with the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, the ATSDR, to do such that, to do that, a health study. And we're still waiting on them.
Wow.
We even had a congressman write in a letter of approval for having a testing done. And they, we still have never heard back from them. Now, this was back in 2012. Let's speed forward to now. I've been speaking with government officials, state officials, and going out there today, going out there and doing a health study and soil sampling. And I'm supposed to have a conference call coming up soon with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency and a member from the Illinois Attorney General's office. We've been speaking, we've had several conference meetings the last 2 months about these residents and their exposures, and I believe now may be the time to get the state involved into retesting, getting them out. Well, the state never has tested out there, not even once. So this, I think we're now up to the level of getting them out there to do testing and to do a health study. And the reason now I believe why it's important is because we actually have the off-site exposures and the radiation readings in their yard, something we never had before. So now that we have this evidence to present to them, I believe they're now left with little choice but to follow through. Now, and that's just the local, you know, the state government trying to help us. Again, I got a law firm also wanting to look into their problems as well. So that's sort of our plan B or our backup plan for the residents. But yeah, I have a conference call coming up in a few weeks. In fact, the Illinois Attorney General's office called me several months ago, a lady by the name of Mary Morrissey. She's the chief deputy assistant to the Attorney General. As I understand it, she's the fourth most powerful woman in the state of Illinois, and she's the Attorney General's right-hand man, or woman, so to speak. And for her to call and ask about our problem and to information, I believe, is very, very helpful, and I'm grateful for it. We don't have too many government officials calling us wanting to know what our problem is and if they can help. So for that alone, I'm extremely grateful.
Do you think that President Trump's push to defund the EPA or any of that will have any impact on your case? Because you guys have already been decided, right? It's just a matter of finishing up the process.
Well, see, I hate to say anything like that because we may need their help. And yeah, the last thing I would like to do is say anything negative about them, and especially since nothing they have done yet is negative. I mean, they've all talked right now, but if what they follow through is damaging, wow. I mean, some of the proposals they've made seem so irrational.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, and I'd like to hear follow through from them and why they would do this, but they don't give you any explanation, and that's even more frightening. You know, why don't you want these people to be safe? Why don't you want these people to have healthy, you know, clean water, clean air? You know, these are the answers I'd like to have.
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing. This is that whole neoliberal agenda that Alan Greenspan cooked up in the late 80s or 70s, I guess, where they said if you privatize everything, cut off all government services, it's basically going back to the days of Dickens and saying that the people who have the power and have the money, of course, will keep the toxins out of the environment because they have a vested interest in keeping a healthy environment.
Right.
Which has failed every time, as we saw in your case.
Right, like when you privatize it, it's right there. It says it in the word, private. People don't know. They don't let people know. But when it's in the government's hands, there's always a government official or someone down the line or the food chain who says, you know, this is wrong. People need to know about it. And there's a whistleblower who lets people know. So, you know, in the government's hands is always better than privatized, I always believed. Now, I could be wrong on many levels, but this is just my belief.
So incredible. Now, while we have just a few minutes left, would you explain what the NIOSH Cancer Fund is?
Oh yes, it's from the Labor Department. In the year 2000, the one last thing that Bill Clinton did before he left office was sign a law in effect from the Labor Department for the NIOSH Cancer Fund. And the Cancer Fund is called the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Program Act, or for short, the EEOICPA. And what this does is it compensates employees who's worked in a facility that's processed radiological metals for the government. Now, over the years...
Like you guys.
Right. And there's only been a handful of factories been approved for this since the year 2000. It's a very lengthy process. When I started in 2004... we had the basic information, radiation levels in the factory, where it came from, radiation licensing numbers, things that they needed to make their evaluation. And believe it or not, they all came from me, a lot of this information I acquired through Freedom of Information Act. In fact, I was the only person who had radiation readings inside the factory. I was the only person who had these documents. So I made it my obligation to make sure that other people had this as well. I wasn't going to hold it onto it for my own personal wealth or gain. That would be wrong on my half, but on my part, and I wasn't going to do that. So I made sure a lot of people got this information, passed it on to the government, and worked for years to get us included into this cancer fund. And again, having Senator Obama champion our cause really helped, because when he won the election in 2008, the committee members who were denying our factory for this compensation fund, we're getting worried, because if he becomes president, he could fire them for not approving our factory, like he asked them to over and over again. So to appease him, the president, they approved our factory before he was sworn in. So I
before.
Believe timing, yes, I believe timing was an important
That's
part of
good.
It as well. Here we had someone who was now could fire them, they was afraid of, so they did what he wanted them to do for years, and they were denying them, so they approved our factory for this fund. And not only did they do that, they also approved our factory for residual contamination. And that was for me and my coworkers years after the fact, because I was able to prove that the uranium was still up there till the year 2000.
Wow.
So we didn't actually have to touch uranium be improved to be eligible for this fund, but I proved that the uranium was falling down, touching us underneath it, raining down from the dust. So I feel very confident that I'm the one responsible for the residual part of this fund for our factory, for including all the employees up to the year 2000.
Well, Larry, we're down to our last minute. This hour always goes quickly when you're on with
it
us.
Does.
I am
but
so,
there's so
delighted.
Much information.
It is, and this is why I value your time and value your appreciate, and I call you up all the time and ask you to please come back on, because these are the kinds of actions that are going to help turn our ship around, because what it needs is exposure. We need light to this situation. We have to
Right.
put public pressure on our elected officials to do the right thing, because for so long
have
they've
to
been
take
able
action
to cover
individually.
Up.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. And it's going to take hundreds of thousands of people getting engaged in their own communities. So I really appreciate you doing this. And unfortunately, I'm sorry that it had to happen to you this way. I'm hoping
I
the
am
next
too.
time we talk, we'll have some good news and say your case has been settled. That would be super
Oh,
sweet.
me and my coworkers behind me. If I'm the
Yeah,
only one, I wouldn't feel happy about that. It has to be everyone.
That's awesome. Well, look, I encourage everybody, take your own personal action. Put your courage feet on. Do it afraid. Just walk through it and face this, because it's up to us to save our planet. Thank you, Larry Bergen, for joining us. I really appreciate it. Put your courage feet on, you guys.
on the track,